Hello, awesome people. Welcome to Embrace the Pivot. I'm Dr. C. Robinson, your host for the show. Join me as we discover what pivoting actually means and how you can embrace your pivot during life's transition. Hello, 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 awesome people. I hope you are having a fantastic week. As always, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. If you have any comments about pivoting or any questions, happy to answer them. Who doesn't love a good heartwarming story? Especially one where companies do good, they uplift others, and they help propel them forward and upward. Who doesn't like that? This story today with two women is inspiring, and it shows just how when a company wants to not only transition their culture from within, but impact and transition a whole societal norm, just how effective that can be. And today I am talking to Kara Gush and Melissa Panzer. Now, here's the background around today's interview. Goodwill launched the Digital Career Accelerator, which is a training program designed in partnership with Google, and with more than $20 million in funding and grants from Google.org. They are helping people gain real skills that can be applied in the workplace. Because in today's society, there is a huge discrepancy between the skill-based economy and the knowledge-based economy. And a lot of people coming out of college, they have the knowledge, but not necessarily the skills needed to work in the corporate environment. So what Goodwill and Google are doing is they are helping people develop those skills that they can then apply within corporations. It is such a powerful initiative. I am so excited to be sharing it with you. Kara was a participant in the Goodwill Accelerator program. And Working Nation, a nonprofit media company focused on the future of work, released a short documentary film called Glory and Overcoming. It focuses on three women of color, all single mothers, who completed a skills training program called the Goodwill Digital Career Accelerator. Kara was one of the women. She had three daughters under the age of four and was getting divorced when she entered the training program. It is a journey through this documentary of how these women have succeeded and now are giving back, not only to the corporations that they're working for, but also within the community. Melissa is the film's director, and she comes from Working Nation. So today's interview is all about how the vision that Melissa saw and the story she wanted to share, and Kara shares what it was like going through the program and how the training program has transitioned and pivoted her life. Kara is now working as the engagement and career coach for active apprentices with her dream company, Accenture. And how she became involved with Accenture is a partner of Goodwill's Rising Together initiative, which connects people, particularly those from populations that have been historically marginalized, with a wide range of resources, including skills training, transportation, and internet access to support entrance into and longevity in the workplace. Accenture expands its skills to succeed services for youth and youth adults, which provides skills training resources to help them navigate their career. This is just such a special program. I wanted to shine a light on it. Everyone, please give your attention to Melissa and Kara.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So I am so excited to hear about Goodwill's tech program and the genesis behind the documentary that you made, Melissa. So why don't we first start with Kara and talk about your experience and then how that led to Melissa, you wanting to film these women and the great work that Goodwill and all their partners are doing. So Kara, why don't you share with me briefly what led you to the Goodwill program?
Yeah, and thank you so much for letting me be here. I'm truly honored. So, hey, Kara Gooch, and I am currently a talent strategist with Accenture. And what led me to the program, oh man, what a journey it has been. So 2017, I came back to Nashville from Los Angeles, California, where I was born and raised with my three girls. And at the time, the girls were 4 and 2, or I'm probably getting that wrong. Yeah, 6 and 2. And I have twin girls. Those were the 6-year-olds. And then the toddler was 2. And I was coming in a space of being so depressed, so run down, because I was in the process of getting a divorce and pivoting from a relationship that was not the best place for me to be, and then still wanting to work in the marketing space at the same time. And I came off of the heels of having 5 clients at one time, being mentored by someone that truly gave me the ins and outs of the marketing world. And here I am yet again, living by myself with the 3 girls. And I just wanted something different. I just wanted to make sure that the girls had a live-in example of what success could look like.
That's powerful.
Yeah, because it was something that I didn't always have the closest tangible example of. If I could do that for my girls, then that was, I was going to win, right? That was the win of the century for me. When I decided to go into tech, I knew that going back to school was not going to be an option. Having the 3 girls, maintaining a job that was barely getting food on the table, we were, you know, at the time going to either free food giveaways, plus people at church, or just random people would give us money, or me choosing between keeping the lights on or keeping the internet on. Mm-hmm. And all of those things were the genesis of, it's time to get into tech because tech gets you the money that you need. Great. Yeah. I'll do that. A coworker introduced me to the Goodwill program, and it was featured in the Tennessean, because I was in Tennessee at the time. It was featured in the Tennessean, and the article featured a young lady that was also a single mother of 2 children, and she had recovered and survived through homelessness. And I said, wow, this girl is a living example for her girls. Let me go ahead and just see it through. And I did. And I actually found that young lady, which is the one that is featured in Glory and Overcoming, Chelsea Rucker. And I found her on LinkedIn, and I said, hey, you know, can you help me? I really want to get involved. And I did. And she advocated for me, pointed me in the right direction. And I got involved with the Goodwill Career Accelerator. And from there, I was able to finish, go through the program. And with Accenture's relationship with Goodwill, I was able to be connected with a recruiter that talked about a an apprenticeship program that was piloting out of the Nashville office because the apprenticeship program had survived since 2016. But because it was starting now in the Nashville market, they wanted to say, hey, you know, do we have any candidates that would be great for the program? And they said, actually, yes, we have somebody that is about to graduate from the accelerator. And I was connected. And from there, I'm on the journey that I'm on now.
So now what is your actual position within the company?
Yeah, so that has actually changed a couple of times. But today, I'm very happy to say that I am a talent strategy analyst with Accenture.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you.
All right, Melissa, how did you hear about this fabulous program that is helping individuals get back on their feet?
Sure. So Working Nation, which is the company that I produce content for, everything we do is focused on telling stories about work and the future of work and what jobs of today and tomorrow look like to really on-ramp people to a sustainable middle-class income and beyond. All of our content is fun. Well, I'll say most of our content is funded by third-party grant giving and the Tides Foundation, which is associated with Google.org, gave us some funding for a series of short docs. And the sort of only requirements was that the programs we highlighted in that storytelling were tech-driven, accelerator and certification training programs, short-term credentials. And Google is, they make this possible, the program that Cara went to, and it's their certification that Goodwill is teaching for. And so with no pressure to highlight this program, they suggested we look into it. And we did, and we spoke to Goodwill on the phone about it, and it was super moving to hear about the kind of success the program had had and the kind of partners that Goodwill has able to sustain, and the job placement rate, which is really important to us when we're telling stories. Training programs are wonderful, but if people aren't getting jobs at the end of them, then they're not as valuable, obviously. Spoke to Goodwill, and I was super blown away by what they were doing. And job placement to us is just as important as a certification, if not more important, in the storytelling that we do. And the job placement rate at this program is exceptionally high. And the wages that people are making is really impressive. It was a no-brainer, at least, to learn more information about the work that was going on. And actually, something that was fascinating to me, usually the style of storytelling we do at Working Nation is really program heavy. So we'll find a human interest story, and then we'll weave that generally through a story about a program. And in this scenario, I was on the phone with Goodwill, and they were pitching possible storylines for us to follow. And they pitched three ideas. And I said, well, three is too many. We don't do that. I can only really pick one or two. And something that I heard, and so then I did the pre-interviews with all three women, and something that I think Cara, you said, and but at least Cara said, but I think it was more than just Cara, was when we watched those kinds of stories that you're alluding to, these sort of like, there's this one success story or two success stories, we don't really believe the program. And are they paid? Is there, what's the catch to the success? And that really, really stuck with me. And I decided to change how we were going to do the story, because to me, getting more people in the door to participate was just as important in our storytelling as highlighting what the program was actually doing. And I wanted whoever was watching to believe that these were real women and you could do it too.
Yeah. So you really pivoted the storyline to help others. And I love, Cara, how you pivoted yourself to, you know, make a name for yourself in the career. So as you were going through for both of you, how did this film also help transform your life or evolve how you saw careers?
Who, you want both of us to answer? Or
yeah. Yeah. Both of you.
Well, I'll air some of my own dirty laundry. And Cara can, I feel like, should chime in here too with what I'm about to say, which is the way we did this film, we started with this roundtable conversation, which I had never done this way before. I was like totally petrified that it was not going to work. And on more than one occasion in the hour and a half that we filmed, I feel like I said, Cara, right? Like, I don't know, guys, this might work and it might totally just blow up.
Yeah.
yeah. And truthfully, in letting them sort of lead, I feel like it really gave me the story I was looking to find. Which was so much more powerful than me sort of like driving interview questions.
And Melissa, why did you think that it might blow up?
It was so uncontrolled. Like there was nothing. I mean, we walked in, I said, you guys are just going to like talk. I gave Cara and Chelsea and Shahira like three prompts and okay. then just like let them drive.
All right. And Cara, going into it, what did you expect and how did this film or documentary help you evolve in your career or your perception of the world or whatever you would like to define it as?
Yeah, when I got the opportunity to work with Working Nation, it was great to see that they were working with a organization that meant so much to me with the Good World Career Accelerator. And for someone that has benefited from that initiative, I was excited to take the bull by the horns and jump in feet first, not having so much context as to what was going to be shared, what was what we were going to go through. I just knew that I needed to be somewhere at a certain date and I was there. and especially being there in hopes of being reintroduced to some of my favorite people, I knew that this conversation was somewhat of a dream come true, right? Because these are two people that I know individually, and being able to bring those two women together, whereas we all have the same common thread of being single parents and surviving what should have stopped us, mm-hmm. what should have made us to look at every pivot in life and say, it's not worth it. We took our own individual lanes. We took our own individual spaces of trial and said, let's go forward. And we all landed in a similar space of triumph. And to be at the table and say to another woman in particular, of course, because we were all single mothers at the time, so I can only speak to women in this space, yeah. but to say to another woman, you can too, was the engagement, was the space of empowerment, was the space of encouragement of my life. And it was an incredible space to be in and share with some of my favorite people again.
Yeah. All right. This is going to be a two-part question, first for Cara and then Melissa. So first, Cara, was it difficult for you to ask for help? Because in this country, there is a stigma around asking for help. Everyone tries to do it on their own, even though it's proven you can't do it on your own, but people try to. So did you feel weird, for lack of better terms, about asking for help?
That's such a good question, because I thought about this the other day. And while I was preparing myself for today, I made sure that in my own reflection time, that I went back to that objective of you're not giving someone a hand out, you're giving them a hand up. And
that is so powerful.
and when I looked at it that way, being able to ask someone across the state from me to say, hey, I see that you did it. How can I do it too? I only survived and made it to that point because someone else helped me I only made it to the point of marketing because someone helped me and gave me the mentorship that I needed. I only made it to the Google Career Accelerator program because Chelsea helped me. I only made it to the apprenticeship program because I first helped myself. Yeah. And then I asked the program director to help me get connected to someone. I only made it to from an apprentice to a graduated apprentice to now working on the same team and making it a full circle moment for me to join Accenture because I am now serving the same community that I came in through to get into Accenture. I'm now helping someone else to do and go through the same program that helped me. Asking for help is probably the best thing that I did for myself. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question in the long and short of it, no, I don't think it was hard for me to ask for help. It may have hit me in the jaw a couple of times to do that. It hit me in the pride a little bit, but no, it did not. It wasn't hard.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing. Melissa, I'm going to turn it over to you because with the research that you do at Working Nation, have you noticed lately a shift in people being able to ask for help when it comes to careers? And as you entered this project, did you think you were going to find some resistance from people sharing about how they got to where they are today?
I'll answer backwards. Because the second part of your question, I feel like is the easier answer, which is no, I wasn't worried about people sharing with me. I feel like I work really hard to make a really comfortable environment for the interviewees that I'm sitting down with. And I try to be as transparent and honest as I can be about my own experiences in life. In fact, I start every interview the exact same way, which is I say, I am an expert in what I do and I am not an expert in what you do. So we're going to talk about this like I'm a kindergartner, because I really want people to feel comfortable, like, and explaining is fine. And, you know, so I approached this the same way. As for people asking for help, generally speaking, you know, it's a hard question for me to answer because I don't think there are two groups of marginalized people people who are marginalized that would answer that the same way. I think, for example, in this scenario, single moms, which actually has become a huge focus of a lot of the work I've been doing, they don't ask for help, period. And it's not because they don't want to ask for help. It's because I just became familiar with this term, time poverty. Their brains are so focused on making sure their kids are fed and that they get their homework done and out the door and bettering themselves so that they become strong examples. And it's just about like pushing forward and moving forward. And I feel like there's guilt maybe that comes with asking for help, and it takes time to ask for help, and I'm better doing it myself. But I will say, to a point Cara just made, when they do ask for help and when they can ask for help. And by the way, I am just as much a victim of this as anyone else.
Yep. Me too.
Everything is easier. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I hate asking for help. My husband and I see a psychologist every week, and 90% of what we talk about is like, Melissa, if you just ask for help, you know, like, yep. So I think, yeah, when you get in the room, once you're in the room and you've done the hard thing of asking, yeah, there's a huge shift. But getting to that point is just generally so hard, and so hard for this particular population of single mothers.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up that point, time poverty. We associate poverty in so many other lenses, but the time poverty, I haven't heard it until recently. So Kara, did you experience time poverty, and how were you able to manage that with now learning a new skill set?
I definitely experienced it and kind of leaned into it when it came to going through the program. That experience definitely taught me a lot about prioritization. And there were times where I had to choose between so many difficult cycles of where to give my time. And more often than not, I was studying when it came to when the girls were sleeping. I was studying at 1-2 o'clock in the morning because that was the best time for me to get time back for myself. Because from the moment you wake up as a single parent in that season, from the moment that I woke up, it was whatever the girls needed. And as soon as I get to work, it's whatever my job needs. And as soon as I get back on the road, it's me getting back to the girls, which was my priority, right? And getting there safely. And so, yeah, leaning into that, wow, that's so interesting that what you feel when you get language for something that you went through in the past. Yeah. You're like giving this whole aha moment. And so that's what I'm experiencing right now. It's like a wow, an opening aha moment.
You'll always remember being on this podcast. Yeah. All right. So this is, again, a two-part question for both of you. What do you think, in regards of a mindset that single mothers face and maybe are afraid to take a risk on something that is going to propel them forward? And Melissa, that can come from, you know, the work and research that you do at Work Nation.
Sure. Kara, you start.
So the mindset of a single parent is solely survival. And sometimes you do that at the cost of yourself. Mm. You survive so that your legacy can outlive you. And that is probably the greatest detriment that a single parent can put themselves in, because sometimes your clicker goes out before your children are really able to see and look back and understand why you made the sacrifices you made. And why they can ask you the questions of, so what did you sacrifice for me? And them getting the answers to those questions. And the second part of that question, if you can remind me of the question.
Yeah, just so with the mindset of single parents, what stops them from taking a risk and trying something new that could ultimately propel them forward?
Yeah. And the risk that you take of not choosing yourself, I think. And I think my message to those that choose that choose not to take that risk, is you're still needed, regardless of how many people that you see in front of you that are growing, thriving, and excelling. You're still needed, and there's still space for you. And whatever you have in you is necessary, and there's no saturation in a market.
Melissa, would you like to add anything?
Sure.
There's
two things I feel like that I've learned in this process, because I'll tell you it's not off the record, it's just I'll give you some context. Since doing this project, I have like been doing only single mom projects. So that's like November to July. it has been like the predominant focus of the work I've just by chance, and having to do with community college certifications also. So it's just been like in my face a lot the last 9 months. And I think there's two things that Kara is leaving out, but I think you would agree with this. I think I'll be curious to hear. One is you don't know what you don't know. And so there are so many resources. I mean, obviously it's state dependent, but there are so many resources available to people who are living behind, below the poverty line if they are motivated to go to school or do an accredited certification. But it is literally impossible to know about those resources if you don't know where to get information about those resources. And it is like just a totally broken cycle of access to information. And so I think that's a big part of it. The total exhaustion of like, where do I start? I think gets in the way of a lot of certainly single moms. And then the second thing is these women, mostly women, are fighting for their lives and the lives of their children. And they've oftentimes suffered horrible experiences. I mean, the two other women in the piece, Chelsea and Shahira, both lived in domestic violence shelters. Mm-hmm. Shahira lived in a domestic violence shelter for a month and a half. I mean, wow. I barely spoke English. And so the other obstacles that a lot of these women are facing are humongous, and they get in the way. They get in the way of opportunities. You are so down. I think, I can't speak from my own experience. I haven't experienced this. And again, I'm curious if Kara agrees with this, but your confidence is low, and it has nothing to do with you. You didn't put it there, but just believing in yourself and believing that you can do it. And it is really hard, I think, for a lot of these women, and rightly so, by the way. And so I think the fear of failure certainly plays a part of it, and lack of connection and not knowing. I mean, I think Kara was in a remarkable situation where she heard Chelsea's story and thought, like, she's like me and I can do this too. And that's just not always the case.
Mm-hmm. So
can I agree with her just one second?
Go for it.
Yeah. I also think in agreement to having to be so strong all the time, mm-hmm. and that confidence being low, it's tiring holding up the strength of the world. And our world is the children that we hold, the idea that someone else is judging what you're going through, mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you cannot maintain because of XYZ. You cannot maintain because you are only a single mother. You can't be greater because you are only this. The strength that you have to muster every single day and not allow your children to see it at the same time is the most tiring job that you can ever take on by yourself. And then to add on the potential disappointment of an opportunity that can get you out of your situation and that not coming through, that's where that low confidence can come from. It's that, mm-hmm. that consistent strength. It's that tiredness of strength that you have to maintain all the time. And that's the most exhausting part of it.
I think too, really quick, sorry, can I just add one really quick thing?
Yeah.
Which is just, I think that in a lot of these scenarios, again, Kara, I feel like I want you to confirm if this is true, but it's like a house of cards. Mm-hmm. And as soon as one card gets pulled out, like your kid gets sick, you're going to mm-hmm. miss class. Your teacher doesn't understand. How is the childcare helping? You can't go to work. Like, it just all falls apart in one card being pulled out.
Yeah. Yeah. Fully agree.
Yeah. Kara, you are dropping nuggets of wisdom, inspiration, and power. This is incredible. I'm getting chills over here as you talk. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Melissa, the house of cards, it's so true. And when you think about not just single parent or mothers, I don't want to discard that. It just seems that we're so many of us are facing other things that are making us tired or in that time poverty. And just to hear, Cara, how you're the single mother and doing that on top of everything, I just want to give you a big hug right now because it sounds exhausting. Oh my goodness. Ladies, if someone came to you stating that they were about to pivot or transition in their career, what would be your biggest piece of advice to them to help make that journey successful?
Go ahead, Melissa.
You want me to go? Okay.
Yeah.
I think that, it is a loaded question. but I think the most important thing is to make sure that you understand the risk and reward of what you're pivoting to. Would probably be my most very tangible suggestions. Because it's really easy. I was going to use the example of becoming a writer, terrible example right now. But it'd be really easy to decide you wanted to be a teacher, let's say. We know there's a great need, right, for teachers right now. But like, will that cover your bills? Is there, going back to school to become a teacher, is there real value in that? Like, are you going to have to take out loans? What is that going to look like? What is the payback rate like? Collecting all of the information that you really need to make clear, good decisions about how and what you're pivoting to, I think is really important. I mean, I think part of why this program is so remarkable is because pivoting in tech is, for the most part, a good decision. There's work. Certainly, if you are a woman of color, there's huge opportunities for, you know, growing equity and equality in the tech industry. And so I think like it's a great decision to make, but not all jobs carry that same sort of reward at the end of a pivot. Mm-hmm. And so I would say know what you're getting into before you make your pivot and make sure you are as armed as possible and know what's available to you in the transition time.
I love that. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And for me, I take a lot of pride and intention in celebrating others and helping them to see their full potential. And I use that fuel. I use those spaces of intention to amplify and help other people amplify their own voices by championing others. And Melissa, as she said, is a great example of that, because just like I did with working with her during the documentary, I saw firsthand how dedicated she was as a director and producer to tell other people's stories and tell the stories that matter. And I use that today as a coach for our active apprentices. And I go back to different areas in my journey, and I use them as power, because there is power in the pivots that we take mm-hmm. within our career. And I can mm-hmm. also use that to speak life to different people and speak direction into those that are coming behind me. And so the biggest thing that I can say is the picture. Let it be the big picture. Let it be the small picture that is in front of you. The picture will never be widescreen if you can't change your perspective. And that's what this pivot and every pivot that's led me to this point has taught me, that pivots require perspective. Sometimes, just as Melissa said, you have to understand where the longevity of that pivot will take you. And you have to be able to step into the risk of it, because there's a lot of unseen that we'll have to endure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things for me was being able to be in a home that all three of my girls can have their own room. And mm-hmm. because I stepped into the power of those pivots, I'm now able to supply that for my girls. We now live in our second, it's a rental, but I'm able to afford it. Hey, yeah. I'm able to afford this now second 4-bedroom home with a yard and a dog and share my room with a husband that loves me unconditionally and is such a supporter of everything that I do. And Eve can now even say that he works at Accenture as well because of the apprenticeship program. But I couldn't have gotten there because if I didn't change my perspective. Yeah. And that pivot was the perspective shift that I needed. And I encourage every person, every woman, every single parent that wants to see what the other side of an end looks like, please, please choose to change your perspective a bit, because it will save you more than it'll hurt you.
Kara, I think you should start a daily newsletter and have a short video of you preaching, because man, I would watch it. Where can my listeners find you on social media?
Oh, they can find me at, I'm on Instagram. I'm not sure if I want to get on Threads yet.
Don't do it.
Yeah. I'm on Instagram at Kara, K-A-R-A dot G-O-O-C-H is just my full name. And I'm also on LinkedIn. Same name, Kara Gooch.
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Melissa. I was going to say, and how about you, Melissa?
Well, first and foremost, my Instagram handle is MK Panzer, my last name. And then my first name, Melissa Panzer, is my LinkedIn profile, but also Working Nation, which is where I work, is on all social media platforms at Working Nation. And you can find this story there and every other story that we've told about jobs in the future of work.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining me today and sharing this incredible opportunity and documentary. This is going to help thousands and thousands of people. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, it was an honor.
You can follow me, Dr. C, on Instagram at Embrace the Pivot. I hope all of you embrace your pivot.